From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, January 8th, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Douglas Ridge, a new eco-conservation subdivision in Brunswick, dedicated to nature-centric sustainable home design. More at douglasridge.com.
Flu's been detected in all 16 counties in Maine and is now considered widespread across the state. That's according to the Maine Center for Disease Control. More than 1,200 cases and 90 hospitalizations have been reported this season, but CDC officials say this is likely an underrepresentation. Six people have died. Health officials are urging the public to get vaccinated, wash hands, cover coughs, and stay home when they're sick. The international credit card payment processing company EVO has notified the State Department of Labor that it plans to lay off 139 employees at its Portland offices in the Public Market Building. But DOL Commissioner Laura Fortman says with the unemployment rate in the Portland area hovering around 2%, local companies are already getting in touch.
We have already received requests from employers in the area to make sure that any workers who are losing their jobs know about other job opportunities that are available in the area.
Maine law requires companies with more than 100 employees to give the state 90 days notice in advance of layoffs of more than 50 people. Fortman says the layoffs won't start until at least March.
So that should give us plenty of time to meet with the employer, meet with the workers, and hopefully connect people to either other employment immediately or training opportunities.
The company notified the Department of Labor about the 139 layoffs yesterday. EVO didn't immediately return calls for comment, and Fortman says the DOL hasn't yet had the chance to speak with the company. And Maine astronaut Jessica Meir is scheduled to take two spacewalks over the next couple weeks to upgrade batteries that store power generated by the International Space Station solar arrays. Meir and fellow Expedition 61 flight engineer Jessica Cook are set to do the work Wednesday, January 15th and Monday, January 20th. NASA says this will be Meir's second and third spacewalks. The spacewalks will be streamed live. In October, Meir and Cook made history as they took part in NASA's first all-woman spacewalk, conducting repairs on the space station. In weather, tonight windy with snow showers ending and skies clearing overnight. Lows tonight in the mid-single digits to the mid-teens. Tomorrow mostly sunny and windy with highs in the low double digits to the high 20s. Friday, snow showers north, otherwise mostly cloudy with a chance of some very light rain, highs in the low 30s to mid-40s north to south. And on Saturday, rain turning to snow in the far north, otherwise overcast with a chance of some nighttime rain. Central Maine Power's won a key state approval for its controversial proposal to build a major transmission line through the state's western woods. Fred Bever has details.
At a meeting in Brewer, the Land Use Planning Commission voted 5-2 in favor of issuing a site law certificate for the proposal. Some of the commissioners struggled to restrict their analysis to the project's effects on three relatively small parcels of land and water bodies.
If I was to vote strictly on my emotions, I might not be so in favor of this.
Commission member James May said that while he understood that the project might comply with the specific regulations for unorganized territories that are within the board's purview, he's unhappy with the way CMP approached the review process. May says CMP at first maintained it could not afford rights of way that would allow the project to be routed away from a wilderness water body called Beatty Pond, but then suddenly made the deal happen when it became clear that was a sticking point for the commission.
And then they tried to put pressure on us to make a decision before we were ready. And I've just not been happy with some of that.
He eventually joined four other commissioners to vote in favor of the project. Two voted against it, and one, Gwen Hilton, abstained due to an unspecified conflict. The approval sets the stage for consideration of the project's overall effects on Maine's environment by the State Department of Environmental Protection.
We're obviously very pleased. It was very clear that the commissioners took their responsibility very seriously.
Thorne Dickinson is vice president at CMP. He says the company wasn't stonewalling the commission over the Beatty Pond issue, but wasn't able to come to terms with the owner of a nearby parcel until the last minute.
Despite how it may look, in the end, we came with a proposal that we believed was better because it had less environmental impact and better for Maine.
Environmental and other organizations opposing the project were disappointed by the commission's decision, but not surprised, given that LUPC staff had already recommended approval. And Sue Ely, a lawyer with the Natural Resources Council of Maine, points out that it dealt only with a small portion of the lands affected by the project, a parcel where the Appalachian Trail crosses the power corridor, and a parcel where the power line would cross the Kennebec River Gorge.
So it was a really narrow look at just these two small components of this very large and very damaging project.
Ely notes that DEP's more comprehensive review of the 141-mile project's overall impacts on Maine lands is still pending. In addition to the DEP permit, CMP has already received approval from state utility regulators and is seeking a permit from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Opponents, meanwhile, continue to seek signatures needed to get a statewide vote on whether the project should be allowed at all. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
The legislature's back in session and with a lot of work to do between now and April 15th, when they're supposed to adjourn. Maine Public Radio's senior political reporter Mal Leary joins me from the Capitol to talk about the multitude of issues before lawmakers. Mal, is this session facing more challenges than past legislatures?
Well, Nora, probably not in terms of major issues that they have before them. But when you look at the number of bills that they have, it's going to be a really big challenge. Over 400 bills from last year's session were carried forward to this session. Add to that hundreds of new bills from individual lawmakers, bills from state agencies, and bills from Governor Mills. That's a lot of measures they have to consider and act on within this time frame, which isn't a lot of time. Now, a lot of the measures are, I'd call them kind of housekeeping, like they have to have a bill in to change the charter of a local water district. But some are going to generate a lot of discussion and a lot of debate.
Okay, so what is the big issue that's likely to dominate this session?
Well, like past sessions, it almost always is money, and it's probably going to be that again. Republicans are making it clear they do not want to spend the, let's call it extra state money on new and expanded programs. They want it stashed away in the state's reserve accounts, the rainy day fund, so to speak, so that if we have any future downturn in the economy, the impact can be minimized. Now, Nora, there's over $100 million in extra revenues this year. A little over $20 million of that is what's called one-time money by the Revenue Forecasting Commission. We haven't seen the governor's supplemental budget, but typically there's some shifting around of existing funding, and there's also some new money used to meet needs that have increased since the original budget was passed. And boy, let me tell you, there are several bills that individual Democrats have introduced that will cost something if they're passed, dealing with a wide area of issues from corrections to the drug crisis to children's services.
Okay, so spending on new programs, saving money for a rainy day, there's always fights about money. But what about borrowing money? I see there are numerous hearings on bonds this month.
Bonds are going to be a battle. They seem to be won every year. They carried over, and I hope you're ready for this one, from last year, they carried over a request for $2 billion in bond proposals. And they're for just about anything you can think of, from broadband expansion to highways, transportation, to funding the Land for Maine's Future program, and just about anything else you can think of. As you mentioned, there's another group of bonds proposed this session. Again, Republicans have some leverage on bonds. Bonds need a two-thirds vote to send to the voters to have the final say. And last year, a session, they only supported one bond issue that was for transportation, and that was approved by the voters in November.
Speaking of transportation, is that another area where we might see some conflict among lawmakers?
Well, I certainly was expecting some conflict there because there were several proposals floating around, some of them calling for a gas tax increase to try to get at the more than $200 million backlog in needed projects to repair bridges and roads. But this afternoon, the legislature's transportation committee basically punted and said, well, we need to do more work on this. We've got scores of recommendations of how some other states are dealing with this issue, and we need to look at it some more and come back to the next session of the legislature with some recommendations. Now, whether the whole legislature is willing to go along with that is a big question, because the Department of Transportation will be looking at a shortage and that backlog building up unless they get some money this year from a bond issue or from some sort of new source of revenue. So that's an issue that's up in the air, but not as controversial as it might have been.
Well, it's the most wonderful time of the year, and I guess we'll probably be talking to you several more times as the legislative session develops. Mel Erie, our senior political reporter. Mel, thanks so much.
Thank you, Nora.
One issue that's bound to be huge this session is health care. And on this first day of the session, Maine Governor Janet Mills and Democratic legislative leaders unveiled a new bill that they say will improve health insurance in the individual and small group markets. They say the bill is designed to reduce out-of-pocket costs, stabilize premiums, and move closer to a state-run marketplace. Patty White reports.
It's called the Made for Maine Health Coverage Act, and co-sponsor Senate President Troy Jackson says one of the ways it will reduce costs is by requiring insurance companies to cover patients' first primary and behavioral health care visits for free.
It may not sound like much, but depending on your co-pays, that could be a tank of oil that many people struggle with.
Governor Mills says the goal is to get people in the door to the doctor's office before health issues become emergencies. The bill also seeks to prevent premium increases by merging the individual and small group markets together.
Creating a combined larger pool, a larger and more stable pool of covered lives, of enrollees to stem increasing costs.
The state would also apply Maine's reinsurance program to this combined pool. It's a program that was revived last year in the individual market after being used briefly from 2012 to 2013, when it was credited with preventing double-digit premium hikes. A third component of the bill would move Maine toward a state-run marketplace, a priority that Mills announced last summer. She says no appropriation of state tax dollars would be needed to enact the provisions of the bill, and she expects bipartisan support. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And members of the Passamaquoddy tribe say they're grateful to Governor Mills for her posthumous pardon of former tribal attorney Don Gellers, who was convicted of felony possession of 6 marijuana cigarettes 50 years ago. Gellers was a fierce advocate and defender of tribal members who paved the way for the historic 1980 land claims settlement. And as Susan Sharon reports, his pardon is viewed by some as another step toward improving relations with the state.
Passamaquoddy tribal rep Rena Newell was too young to remember the young attorney from New York who became a champion for civil rights and later got himself into hot water with state police and prosecutors. But Newell says she thought it was important to be present for the governor's historic announcement, both for the Gellers family and for the tribe. Gellers died in 2014.
So it was somewhat of an emotional, moment to be finally recognized and to have the history again corrected, in his favor.
In 1968, after a state police sting, Gellers was sentenced to 2 to 4 years in prison for the drug charge, a sentence that was never enforced by the state. Meanwhile, his co-defendant was released on $500 bail. Gellers was also disbarred from practicing law in Maine and later emigrated to Israel. Passamaquoddy Vice Chief Daryl Newell of Indian Township says Gellers' efforts on behalf of the Passamaquoddy tribe have never been forgotten.
Our people, even today, are respectful of him being an advocate for Native folks and oppression of Native folks and the injustices of Native folks. So he was a warrior for the Passamaquoddy tribe.
Representative Rena Newell says the official forgiveness of Gellers by the governor marks another important step in thawing relations between Maine tribes and the state that have been strained over jurisdictional issues and the right to self-determination. She says she's hopeful for continuing improvements. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a conversation about the history of Maine's statehood. I'm Nora Flaherty.